By 1930, Faber and Faber had a book committee which was really at the cutting edge of publishing. It had directors with unrivaled experience of particular areas. T.S. Eliot and poetry is perhaps the most relevant. His own works continued to head the list. In 1930, he published Ash Wednesday, and he also, through his editorship of the Criterion, had an unrivaled correspondence with writers throughout Europe. It was this journal that Eliot had founded in 1922, and it was the first English periodical to publish Proust and Valerie. It gave Eliot and then Faber a marvellous reputation. It was a magnet for all of the great European writers. One of the key people Eliot was in contact with was James Joyce. There had been very fraught discussions about whether to publish Ulysses, and in the end they decided not to. T.S. Eliot was very pro indeed to Ulysses. He regarded it as the outstanding imaginative prose work of the century, but bits of it were obscene, and there was a strong risk that the company would be prosecuted and could lose all their assets in defending an obscenity trial. So they took a decision not to publish it for the time being, and they periodically reviewed that. And they published later work in progress by Joyce, which eventually became The Great Finnegan's Wake. But in 1930, one of the key works they published was James Joyce's Ulysses, a study by Stuart Gilbert. This was written with Joyce's own supervision and became the authoritative introduction to the work. There were also a series of one-shilling pamphlets published under the Criterion miscellany. One of these was by Naomi Mitchison on birth control. Another, very relevant to the sort of publishing that Faber was doing, was by D.H. Lawrence on pornography and obscenity. These were really cutting-edge, provocative pamphlets and added great prestige to the name of Faber. But as well as these major cultural publications, Faber was working as an ordinary commercial publisher. And in any area that they considered manuscripts, one of them was religion. Geoffrey Faber was a High Church Anglican, so was T.S. Eliot. And so when a manuscript came along from an American journalist on the death and resurrection of Jesus, this was an attempt by a journalist to look at the historical evidence for whether Jesus existed. And Frank Morrison was initially very sceptical, but by the end of the book he thought the case was very strong indeed. And this work, Who Moved the Stone, went through numerous editions and is still today published in the evangelical world. It was an example of brave commercial publishing on a religious topic. There were at least three Americans on the book committee: T.S. Eliot, Frank Morley, who later went off to work in publishing in America, and Morley Kennelly. So they were always looking at books about America or books that had been published successfully in America. And in 1930, in the list of forthcoming books, the book they lead on is not a new poet. It's not Auden, it's not Joyce. It's a book about Al Capone. The subtitle is The Biography of a Self-Made Man. The list says, Al Capone, chief of all Chicago gangsters, his life is here told in detail for the first time. It was the cause of a great bust-up on the book committee. T.S. Eliot thought it was dreadful and read a report to that effect. But Frank Morley said, no, this book is going to be brilliant. And so they made a decision to get the UK rights, and it was a great success. It's written in a punchy American journalese, but it's wonderful stuff, and it shows that Faber could even go down market successfully. Although there were three Americans on the book committee, there were no Scots, and Geoffrey Faber recognised early on that he needed to do something about this, because Faber and Faber were publishing books in the United Kingdom. We know Faber has always had a strong Irish list, but what to do about Scotland? What he in fact did was he created a partnership with a Porpoise Press in Edinburgh. they had a very distinguished list. And perhaps the best novelist was somebody called Neil M. Gunn. Not widely known now, but he produced a number of very poetic books about life in the Scottish countryside. In autumn 1930, they published his book, the Porpoise Press published his book, Morning Tide. This is about three mornings in the life of a boy in a Caithness fishing village. Faber and Faber only initially distributed the books of Porpoise Press, but when the firm went out of existence in 1939, Faber and Faber took them over, and especially Neil Gunn, and Neil Gunn and T.S. Eliot became great friends. As well as Frank Morley and T.S. Eliot, Richard Delamere was the other key editorial director. He had a strong interest in rural life, and it was through him that the great children's writer Alison Utterly came into Faber. The catalogue for 1931 carries a promotional description of her book, The Country Child. This is a magnificent piece of fictionalised autobiography. It describes her late Victorian upbringing in a Derbyshire hill village. Her father kept Castletop Farm near Matlock in Derbyshire, and it's a year in the life of a Victorian child. It describes her walking to school through dark forests. It describes the harvests and the Irish labourers. It describes Christmas festivities. And just on the horizon is the beginnings of urban life and industrial invasion. What Alison Utterly does throughout her creative life is she sort of broadens out this world into a sort of fictional universe, so that when she later for Faber writes about the adventures of Sam Pig, Tim Rabbit, Bill Badger and the rest, they all live in this fictional Derbyshire country life. The Irish labourers who feature in the Country Child also feature in the Sam Pig stories. She takes it as a backdrop and is so comfortable with it that she can sort of feed it into all her later work. The masterpiece by Alison Utterly is, of course, A Traveller in Time, which is 8 years off. It was published in 1939. But it wonderfully blends her own childhood memories of a Derbyshire rural existence with the Anthony Babington plot in 1569, which was designed to spring Mary Queen of Scots from imprisonment in a local manor house. In my own mind, it's a work of magical realism, because the 16th century and the 19th/20th centuries sort of merge and separate, and there are ghostly bits, and you're never quite sure which century you're in. It's just a magnificent creative work.